Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Tom Moore, who is the author of The Gentle Way 3, Master Your Life, a self-help guide for angels. Tom has developed a system where you can communicate with your guardian angels and spirit guides, and it's a step beyond other self-help books, I believe. It's got a method that is very interesting and also increases the communication between us and the spiritual help that we have available. Welcome, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Dr. Cope, and hello to everyone out there.
So would you like to tell the audience a little bit about your story and how you came to discover The Gentle Way?
Sure. Back about 18 years ago, I was reading a spiritual magazine, and there was an article in there by a gentleman by the name of Robert Shapiro, and he had said that you can request benevolent outcomes in your life. And I said, gosh, that's interesting. I think I'll experiment with that. And so I took it really to a whole other level. I started experimenting because I had tried such things as the law of attraction, all sorts of things that if anyone's seen The Secret, all these methods, and I did not find any of them that worked really successfully. And when I started requesting benevolent outcomes in my life, it worked perfectly, and I'd never been able to say that about any modality that I had ever tried before. And so I worked around with it, and I finally came up with a phrase that I feel I was inspired to create, because it can be said by any person of any belief system, any religious background, and it doesn't infringe anywhere. And you simply say, I request the most benevolent outcome for blank, 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 thank you. And you can say it for the most mundane of things, which I recommend to start off with, because you get immediate feedback, such as driving to work, a seat on a subway or train, things like that.
Yeah, problem that I always had with the law of attraction was that I wasn't ever really sure what the best thing to ask for would be, you know, because you really don't know all the choices out there. And if you understand how all of it works, you also understand how easy it is to limit your choices once you get fairly specific. So what I like about the most benevolent outcome requests is that it leaves a lot of possibilities open.
Yes. And if you don't get what you're asking for, then that normally means that there's something much better coming that you don't know about yet. And that's what's fantastic about asking it, because now in my belief system, I believe it's my guardian angel. But if someone wants to believe that, you know, their request is going to God or Jesus or Allah or Muhammad or a Hindu deity or whatever, it doesn't matter, because it works, and it works perfectly, whatever your belief system is.
Yeah, I want to back up for a minute and express something to our listening audience that they may or may not realize. Whenever we communicate with spirit in session, they are always very specific about one thing, and that's that a huge amount of help is available to us, but we do have to request it. As you said in your book, The Gentle Way 3, guardian angels can only intervene when there's a life-threatening emergency and you're not supposed to die, you know, something really significant. Then they can intervene without permission. But in general, we are supposed to ask for help, and this is something that even organized religion hasn't been real specific about, how much help is available. And, you know, I mean, we pray for the big things, you know, when somebody's dying or when, you know, we lose everything in a financial catastrophe. But like you say, you can specify the little things, you know, a parking space, a trip that normally would be very difficult, you know, for different reasons. You can request that it be a lot easier. So just a lot of things can be requested that we're not even thinking about.
Right. And some people think, oh, I shouldn't ask for these little things because I'm sure my guardian angel or whoever they believe in
is busy.
Much too busy. But they don't realize that, I mean, in my meditation, I've been told that my guardian angel, who I named Theo, takes care of 27,000 whole souls and all the soul fragments that are having lives on Earth. So these are tremendously capable beings, much more powerful than we can even imagine.
Well, what they tell us specifically, which I think is important in your work, and you're welcome to repeat this, because I think if you go into meditation, you'll see that it's true. In spirit, these beings are able to do an infinite number of things simultaneously. That's the exact words they use for us. Infinite number of things simultaneously. So,
absolutely.
That is because they're not really within time-space continuums. You know, they're outside of this dimension. So time and space, which are artificial constructs, are something that they're not limited by. So you're absolutely right. There's no lack of time on their side or too many things requested at once. We can't really, you know, wrap our heads around that because we're still in this dimension. But they assure us that they can do an infinite number of things simultaneously. So that would take away that concern. And then the other thing that I think you realize, and it's been the biggest problem for me, is that we don't know the best outcomes. We really don't know even all the choices that are out there. And once you start limiting, you know, saying that you want a certain outcome, you may very well quit co-creating with spirit in the way that we're supposed to be co-creating.
Right. And at one time, I used to have a photograph. I'm also in, I have a film and TV international distribution business. And at one time, I had a photograph of this private jet sitting on my credenza for ages, thinking, well, gosh, if I can afford a private jet, then I must be very successful. And
right. And
I concentrated on that, and it didn't work. And I was told in my meditations that just isn't my soul contract this time around, soul path, I have other things that I'm supposed to be doing, like this.
Right. And you don't want to miss out on what you're supposed to be doing, because that's probably where your greatest passion and greatest fulfillment lies.
Right.
And you know, there are people that, you know, are supposed to be in certain lifestyles, and it's usually to learn certain lessons. You know, it's the lifestyle and the lesson is often tied together. But most of us who are here in service, you know, we won't be fabulously wealthy, but we also will never have any real significant needs. You know, everything that we really need will be provided because we stay in service. And so we don't really have to worry about finances either. You know, it's kind of like you've got the best of both worlds. When you need something, you're going to have it, even if it's $3 million. If you really need $3 million, it's going to appear. But you're not just going to get $3 million without any reason for having it, you know. It's
true. Just for a nice retirement. So.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, if you need it, then it's there. So if it's something that. Anyway, so would you like to tell the listening audience exactly what is a benevolent outcome? How do you see that phrase? How do you define that phrase?
Well, it's a request, again, that I believe goes to my guardian angel, and my guardian angel looks around the corner, also knows your soul path or soul contract,
mm-hmm.
and can look out, and if it's within the boundaries of your soul path, then you get the request. And obviously in the mundane things of life, like those drives to work and things, those are within, and people, you know, send me all sorts of emails about how fantastic a drive was, or how they barely missed being involved in an auto accident, or their car was conking out on them, and they set a benevolent outcome and made it to a service station or what have you. So there's just many, many ways that you can do that, and then you expand it a little bit, and you start asking for benevolent outcomes for a meeting at work, or
mm-hmm.
Where you have to go to your boss and perhaps tell them that someone is mentally or physically abusing you or whatever. I mean, you really start getting into any number of things that this can be used for. And in fact, I was, you know, when I started putting out this information, people started coming back with things that I never ever thought to even ask for. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, here I was traveling, to Europe for film markets and what have you, and one of my readers of my weekly newsletter came back and said, well, you know, I requested a most benevolent outcome to get through security fast, and when I got up to the lady checking my ticket and credentials, she said, this line over here is just opening. Go ahead and get in that line.
Right.
So he went.
He was
straight
first in line.
to the first of the line. You know. So those are neat things that you know you
mm-hmm.
just never imagined that you're going to get, but you do.
Well, that's because you don't know all the possibilities.
Right.
I mean, you really don't. I mean, you
no,
don't
you
know
don't.
Their systems.
I mean, there's
you know.
Yeah. Thousands. And as I say, if something doesn't look, you know, like if you say, oh, I request a most benevolent outcome for this man to fall in love with me. You know, if
mm-hmm.
I've had ladies that tell me that, and it doesn't happen, and they say, well, do you know what's happening? And then they discover, you know, several months later that the perfect man for them, comes
they
into
met
their
yet.
Life.
Yeah, right.
They just haven't met it. Or maybe what happens is that when you request that perfect mate for you, you have
mm-hmm.
you need to go through another relationship to prepare you for that one, or
right.
Or they're in a relationship and that has to break off. So and the same
right.
thing for jobs. If you request a benevolent outcome for the perfect job for you, someone
mm-hmm.
might be in that job and they have to get promoted or leave the company.
Right.
So there's all sorts of things that machinations have to happen before you get that perfect outcome.
Yeah, that's great. So what are some of the types of requests that you've heard be made? We've talked about, you know, relationships and jobs. And
sure.
What are, like, I would think that if you sense any danger, that would be a very important time to put that request in very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had a lady that lived in on a farm in Kansas or somewhere, and there was a tornado
mm-hmm.
bearing down on her
yeah.
house, and so she grabbed the two kids and requested a benevolent outcome for their safety and headed for the basement, and
mm-hmm.
the tornado lifted up and went right over them. And,
yeah, there you go.
And I had another lady that in California that was walking downtown, at night, and there was this van with a couple of guys in it that started following her. So she
mm-hmm.
requested a benevolent outcome for her safety. And just then, people came out of a house, and
mm-hmm.
and the van sped away. So
right.
There are things like that. I've avoided two wrecks by requesting benevolent outcomes for my drives. One mm-hmm. was I just rented a car in Nice, France, to drive over to Cannes because I had two big trunks full of stuff for my booth that I was going to set up there. And I just left Nice and was on the freeway, and this little French car zoomed past me, and about 5 seconds later, you know, less than probably 100 yards in front of me, he lost control and hit the guardrail mm-hmm. in the middle of the freeway and bounced back, landing, blocking two lanes of traffic. Had I been mm-hmm. 5 seconds earlier, I would have hit him. And so
right.
I was able to slow down and move around him at, you know, mm-hmm. 10 or 12 kilometers an hour and continue on my journey. He wasn't injured. It's just the car was sitting out in the middle. And then here in where I live in Plano, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas, I was returning mm-hmm. from a haircut, and I was on the freeway, just got off the freeway on a major street headed towards my home, and a black pickup truck had turned in front of me, and he was on the left lane nearest the divider. And I was in the middle lane because I didn't want to be that close to him. And a lady mm-hmm. obviously had either been texting or not looking, but she turned right in front of him, and he broadsided her at about like 40 miles an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
And lifted her SUV completely off mm-hmm. Off the cement, and it spun 180 degrees with her side facing me, and I slammed on the brakes and came within 6 feet of hitting her side of the
yeah.
car. So I was very happy that I missed that one.
Yeah. I wanted to tell the listening audience a story that if they've listened to the show, I've done the show for 20 years, so we have a lot of listeners that have heard my stories. But I want to tell you this story because I actually saw my guardian angel. And it was a very interesting experience. I was agnostic at the time. I was in college at Johns Hopkins, and I had taken a nap, but I woke up in my dorm room, and there was a golden light in the room. And I turned around, and there was a 7-foot-tall guardian angel that looked very much like Michael, a warrior class angel. And later on, I interviewed Doreen Virtue on the radio show, and she said that I frequently get in trouble because I always defend the underdog, which is the women injured with breast implants, and of course the implant companies and other companies that perceive that I'm interfering with them, their business, have often come after me. And so she says, I actually have two male warrior class guardian angels because of my job, you know, my job here protecting women.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that when people are in spiritual leadership roles, they often see their guardian angel. Their guardian angel actually appears to them. And it wasn't a dream. It was in broad daylight. You know, but it was the most amazing experience, because after that, I really couldn't be agnostic.
not,
it was impossible.
Kind of hard, yes.
Kind of hard, yeah. I just want to say, I know, I have seen my guardian angel. Doreen Virtue says I have two of them, which I think I do, because I've been in some extremely dangerous situations where people were trying to assassinate me. And I got out of them, okay,
yeah.
through pretty miraculous means. And I could feel the energy of the angels when I was in the dangerous situations.
Yes. On a trip to Sedona, Arizona, which I highly recommend to anybody if you want to really feel energy, go to the vortexes. I requested a benevolent outcome for my guardian angel, Theo, to show up in a photo. And he
mm-hmm.
said, that'll be no problem, Tom. And so if they go to my Tom T. Moore author Facebook page, they'll see a photo of me meditating on the side of Oak Creek, and there's this mm-hmm. like gray kind of little cloud that popped up on the photo that my wife took of me, and of course the photos on either side don't show anything. So
right.
he yeah. showed up on cue, shall we say, and I completely agree with you. Guardian angels do shine a golden light. They're known as golden light beings because mm-hmm. of their age, and I was told that that the whole souls that we call guardian angels volunteered for this job, and my guardian angel Theo told me humorously, he said the job requirements, it said only golden light beings need apply, meaning old,
right.
really old, experienced souls that could
yeah.
handle these thousands and if not millions of decisions going on at the same time.
Isn't that incredible? It really is.
Yeah.
I want to tell another story about Sedona. I was at the Academy of Future Science meeting with Jay Hertog, and I heard to go to the airport vortex, to leave that meeting and go to the airport vortex. So I left the meeting, and I didn't know where the airport vortex was, so I stopped at a gas station and asked, and they told me. And then I went to the airport vortex, and then I was given the vision of the center that I built. And they told me it would be for the disasters. Isn't
yeah.
that interesting?
Yeah.
So I was given the vision of the center.
Yeah, I've had great experiences at the airport vortex. When my wife and I go, we normally stay at this hotel, motel, whatever you wish to call it, that's up on top
uh-huh.
of the airport mesa. And mm-hmm. and you can walk down to it, although there's hardly any walking space. You have to really watch the cars, or you can drive down and park, but they only have about 8 or 9 spaces to park in. And but sitting up on top of that rock with all that energy coming
mm-hmm.
out of it, it's just great. And one time I was there, and there was this Indian shaman on a little trail just around from us, and he was performing, some prayers or whatever. And it was just a beautiful spot that you can see a long way over the valley, and it's very nice.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting to me is I'd never even heard of the airport vortex. I mean, I didn't even know it existed. And
yeah.
then I heard, go to the airport vortex.
strong message there.
Get
yourself up there. And
yeah, get yourself to the vortex. So I did.
Yeah.
I figured out where it was, and everybody there knew where it was, of course. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there is great energy. And then I ended up doing a 7-day water fast with my roommate, and we did. We climbed a lot of the, the rock formations in Sedona.
Yeah,
it was a pretty interesting time to be there. I was in 91.
Yes.
So there's a lot of really really good things that you can do there.
Oh,
so
fun
mm-hmm.
places to visit. Just tons of things to do. They have like over 100. Hiking trails, I think. You can take a little mine train at Cottonwood up to an old mine and see all these eagles and different wildlife along the way. It's a lot of fun.
That's
highly
great.
Recommend it.
So would you like to give the listening audience your contact information so they might be able to take a look at, because you have more than one book out?
Yeah. The website is www.thegentlewaybook.com, and they can also send me if they'd like to subscribe to my weekly newsletter, which gets into a lot of metaphysical subjects, shall we say, and
mm-hmm.
They can send me an email. It lists on the homepage of the website lists my email. They could send that to. And then I also put out a weekly blog that comes out every Saturday, and it has nothing but MBO and BP stories. Now, BP stands for Benevolent Prayers, and that's what you ask for other people. MBOs mm-hmm. are for you specifically. And so you can find that on the website. Just look at the menu where it says blog. There you go. And people send me these stories from all over the world about their successes in requesting MBOs and saying BPs. And just as that The Gentle Way 3 book, Master Your Life, it's filled with hundreds of stories that were sent to me over just a couple of year period. So as I say, so many different kinds of stories, it's just amazing.
So one of the things in your first book was a chapter on the radiant effect. Would you go into that, please?
Sure. The radiant effect seems to happen when, as an example, let's just say you're driving down driving down the road, going to work, and you've requested a benevolent outcome for your drive to work. And it just seems to happen that the cars that are right around you are sort of like in this bubble of protection because mm-hmm. you're in the bubble of protection. And the same thing if people are in your car with you or on the subway with you or what have you, they're just in this bubble that's, and I call it a bubble, it's, however you wish to term it, that accompanies you when you request these benevolent outcomes. And it just radiates over to people. One lady told me the story, wrote to me, she was from Canada and she was visiting Seattle. And so she was doing everything by bus. She didn't drive a car. And so she was on this bus going to the Seattle Space Needle. And as mm-hmm. they approached the Space Needle bus stop, the bus driver just didn't, was looking over at the people probably and not driving ahead. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he slammed on the brakes and everybody mm-hmm. in the bus kind of lurched forward. And he came to a stop, literally a foot away from a car or truck that was just in front of him. And mm-hmm. and she had the presence because, she wasn't upset. She kidded him about not having to do a whole bunch of paperwork after mm-hmm. after that stop. So it does give you a calmness. Mm-hmm. Students have written to me and said that they will request a benevolent outcome for an exam, and they'll mm-hmm. even score higher than the smartest students in the class because they're so mm-hmm. calm and are able to remember the information for the test.
Right. Yeah, not having fear is really important because once fear comes in, your intuition goes out.
Yeah.
And you need your intuition for exams. really do.
And that little whispers in your ear, choose that.
That's right.
This question,
Yeah.
Oh, don't you remember? Oh, yeah, here's the answer to that one.
Yeah, right.
So it works great. Students love it when they get hooked on it.
So, one thing that I was thinking is that as we raise our energy, you talk about raising your energy is really part of the ascension, which I agree with. And as we raise our energy more and more, we really should stay in the radiant effect. Do you see? We really should be able to stay in that for longer and longer periods of time. That's really what the ascension, I think, is all about.
Yeah, you're raising your vibrational level, and that's why in my meditations I've been told that we're having all these lives is that our souls are on what's called a fast track, and because mm-hmm. we're veiled from knowing who we really are, and we don't have any remembrance of past lives, mm-hmm. we have to solve things for the very first time, and the creator of our universe believes that we'll find ways to solve things that no other being in his universe we'll have figured out. And at the same time, it's these lives are all raising our vibrational levels, and there is an end game that that they have planned on why they want to raise their vibrational levels. So, yeah, it's good that you know that our souls were so desirous of raising their vibrational levels that they you know that they volunteered for what's called the Earth Experiment.
Yeah, and what we were told is that nobody ever really thought with the free will experiment that we would forget so completely who we were. You know, that was a surprise that so many of us would, you know, participate in murder and genocide and, you know, just the rape of the planet and, you know, just stupid stuff that it doesn't make any sense to do. The Fukushima thing and the, you know, just all sorts of stuff that is just, you know, in the long run isn't going to really benefit anybody and probably is putting the planet in danger. So, you know, I'm hopeful that the higher energy children that are coming in will have solutions to all these problems.
Speaking of that, yesterday at 4:07 p.m., my first grandchild was born. Brenna just came into the world. So,
well, congratulations.
8 pounds and 3 ounces. That girl is going to be playing sports in a year or two.
right. Well, so, that's great.
So we do hope for our, you know, for our children and our grandchildren to, you know, to take things farther along than we have been, and you know, when I see a documentary, my company owns a lot of documentaries on World War II, but I had not. We only have like 2 or 3 hours on World War I, and I saw just a wonderful 8-part documentary on World War I called 14, and it's diaries of 14 people in World War I, and it had the best footage I'd ever seen on World War I, and it really makes such an amazing statement of the stupidity of war. And
yeah, World War I was a really dumb war. There's no question.
Oh, sure. I mean, and of course, there's a lot of speculation that it was, you know, because of industrial, you know, there were a lot of people that made millions and millions of dollars off of that war, but boy,
well, probably most wars were manufactured to a largest extent for economic gain.
Yes.
It certainly appears that way anyway.
I
don't know if you
probably
ever,
have a whole show on that.
Right. If you ever heard the story that Jim Morrison's father was a CIA operative that was on the boat that started the Vietnam War.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, yeah, that is.
So there's a, and he actually,
and for people,
you know,
that don't know of Jim Morrison, I assume you're talking about of the Doors.
The Doors, yeah. So there's, it's very, very interesting, the history of those first incidents.
Yeah.
There was one for World War II. There was one for Vietnam. Of course, there was 9/11 that occurred.
Yeah.
There was one for World War I, yeah. And if you really analyze those, a lot of them aren't what they appear to be.
No.
And were probably false flag operations. So.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So, anyway, let me get into, if you don't mind, you know, benevolent prayers for just a minute.
Sure.
Before you
do that, though, I do want to make one comment. Okay. One of the most wonderful things that came out of World War I was plastic surgery.
Ah.
Plastic surgery was really developed in World War I. Did you know that?
No, and of course, so many of the troops were horribly burned.
Injured. That's right.
And injured,
right.
And they had limbs. You know, they.
Right.
It was really bad. Of course, they had the gas attacks with the guy's lungs burning up. So that was a nasty, nasty war.
Yeah, it was a bad war. But anyway, I'm sorry. I just wanted to put a plug in for plastic surgery being developed through need, which it was.
Yeah.
And it was developed, and each war, including the latest wars with all the explosive devices, have even done further. You know, now we can do, you know, limb transfers, face transfers, you know, the really amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out of need, you know, severe
right.
burns, limbs being blown off. You know, if you get both your arms blown off, you're a good candidate for a limb transplant. So.
Yeah, and also the things that, you know, I guess you can't say fall under transplants would be the fact that people are even coming up with very inexpensive hands and arms that can be made by 3D printers. I mean, I thought that
right.
was
yeah,
amazing
that's true too.
Breakthrough there. But as you say, and we really know at some point, they have to come up with DNA manipulation where people will be able to regrow hands and arms. But I think that's a ways down the way, shall we say.
Right, right. Well, what about your benevolent prayers?
Well, I was told that requesting most benevolent outcomes is right just for you. And those typically are monitored by your own guardian angel. And when anyone says a prayer in the world, and I came up, again, I think I was inspired to come up with a saying, because in my first book, I was calling them living prayers. But they were all over the place. You know, there was a different way mm-hmm. to say a living prayer for this thing, and a living prayer mm-hmm. for that thing. And by the second book, The Gentle Way 2, the story continues, I started thinking, well, you know, how can I make something so simple that it'll be at the top of your brain when you want to say it, so that mm-hmm. everyone can say it, and meaning everyone of any faith, without saying, you know, dear Jesus or you know, whoever you pray to, so that everyone can, of all faiths, can say the same prayer at the same time, and
mm-hmm.
So it's a joining prayer. It's not a dividing prayer, so to speak. It's not
right.
saying my prayer is better than your prayer or whatever.
And right.
So you say, I ask any and all beings to, you know, whether it be to send assistance in helping to find the people buried in the ruins of an earthquake in
right.
Pakistan.
Yeah.
Thank you. Whatever that happens to be,
mm-hmm.
and it can be any and all beings, because it could be it could be a human, a child,
right.
it could be a dog, a cat,
yeah. Right.
you know, whatever that someone discovers, someone underneath the rubble,
yeah.
and so
yeah.
you say any and all beings, and it's and you just say thank you at the end. You don't
right.
say something. I mean, certainly if you're in a church, temple, synagogue, whatever it happens to be, you can sort of align the prayer to fit where you are,
mm-hmm.
but
right.
But it doesn't need it. And when you say it out loud, I'm told
mm-hmm.
that scientists have not discovered the power of sound yet. And when
mm-hmm.
and when say 100 people or 300 people say the very same benevolent prayer, that takes on an energy that is greater than the individuals that say it. So,
I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes great energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told
yeah.
in meditation that if you were to see these prayers as an example for the people in the ruins
mm-hmm.
you know, of earthquake, it would look like rainbow colored streamers coming from
right.
all over the world and going into that one spot where that earthquake took place. So it's very beautiful energy that you're sending to those people.
And it really, this energy can keep people alive, too. There was a story of one of the women who was buried for, I think, 7 days, you know, no food, no water, nothing. But she got energy, and she was okay. I mean, you know, there are breatharians that live by energy alone. So if enough people are praying for these people, then energy streams in, and they don't need food and water to live.
Yes.
I mean, it is truly an energetic shot, you know, a shot of energy that the prayer is giving them. So, you know, if it's going to take a certain amount of time to get down to the level where they're buried, that energy can keep them alive. And it was an interview that was done with her, and she described she knew that spiritual beings were keeping her alive. Isn't that interesting?
Fine. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we do, you know, the three dimensions that are around us seem very, very solid, and without, you know, without understanding that they're not as solid as they seem. Energy can come and go from other dimensions and actually sustain us without food and water for a long period of time.
Right.
So, you know, that's how it happens. That's the mechanism of it. It's truly energy.
Yep, it is.
Just like you said, you could see that if you saw the prayers, there would be energetic streams going there.
Yeah, but say them out loud. You know, I really encourage people, because if you notice, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, and I don't like to, you know, say anything about people, you know, where they go to pray or whatever. But in, let's just say, in a church, you know, normally it's only one person praying and everyone is listening. Now, if that one person asks, would you please say this prayer along with me?
With me, yeah.
Then they would create great energy. So I encourage people that, you know, if you're ever asked to say a prayer for, say, at your church or temple or synagogue or whatever, for maybe some people in the congregation that are ill or in a hospital, then you ask everyone to say the prayer along with you and say, I ask any and all beings to assist in the recovery to full health for the following people, you know.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very, very important. It really is.
Yeah,
I think we're just in the infancy of understanding how the system's set up. You know, it's like we get born into this dimension and don't know all the rules. We don't have the guidebook.
Yeah,
no organized religion has all of the guidebook either. You know, there's pieces of it, but not the actual, you know, the user's manual.
Yeah. And in my meditations, you know, I'll ask questions and I'll be told, you know, that will come about in several years. But then there are other questions. Mm-hmm. Well, that won't come about for 50 years or 100 years or several hundred years. They won't be able to figure that out.
Right.
So, you know, there's just an amazing amount of things. And I've been told in meditation that, as an example, there are still, you know, hundreds of species of animals and what have you that have not been discovered yet because they wouldn't want the scientists that do that work, the biologists or zoologists or whatever, to get bored. So they've always got to have something for them to discover.
Discover, yeah. Well, that's true too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a thing just, I think yesterday, there's this microscopic organism called a something bear, a water bear. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it can live in extreme temperatures, cold, extreme circumstances. And how it does it is it borrows DNA from other things around it. So even the DNA in this thing can be, I mean, it can borrow DNA when it needs to survive extreme things. I mean, as a biologist, I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it can even change out its DNA in order to survive.
That's
so you might look it up. I think it's called a water bear. It looks kind of like a, it's a microscopic organism, but it looks very strange.
Yeah.
So that's a new thing that they discovered recently.
Right.
And it doesn't even do its DNA like it's supposed to. It does something different.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think there's all sorts of things being thrown at us just to keep us interested. As an example.
Yeah. Since you're a doctor and you perform plastic surgery, I might mention a couple of things that have happened to me in the past that, where I requested benevolent outcomes. In 2006, my first book had just come out, and I was supposed to be going down to Houston to give a talk, and I was having a cough, and mm-hmm. so I went to my respiratory doctor, and I was saying, "Doc, would you please prescribe an inhaler for me to get rid of this?" But and he checked me out, and he said, "No, Tom." He said, "I'm not going to do that." He said, "You've got congestive heart failure, and you're going to go down and check yourself into the hospital."
Oh my goodness!
Downstairs. And so I said, "Well, I'm glad I at least wore my clean undies, Doc." So I went down, and naturally, I was requesting benevolent outcomes and for the outcome. So they first tried to shock my heart, and that didn't work. And I said, "Well, that's okay. I know something better is coming." I mean, because I know this stuff. And so this was over the weekend, and as you well know, not too many surgeons perform on the weekends.
Right.
So it was like Tuesday before they got in an electrocardiologist, and he went in and did a heart ablation, and that did the trick, and then
that did it. Well, that's a benevolent outcome, because that's an easy thing that works very well.
Yeah, and a year later he did. I went back to him. I said, "Gosh, I have all these forgetful moments." And he said, "Oh, it's probably a side effect of one of your drugs." He said, "You know, we can do two things. I can put you on another drug, but it's so powerful that the FDA requires us to keep you in the hospital for 2 nights." To watch you, or he said, "I could do another ablation," and he says, "It's got an 80% success rate. If it's successful, you'll be able to get off all your drugs." And so I said, "Let's take door number two."
So, yeah, really.
So I did, and I was able to get off all
that's great.
The medication
yeah.
that I was off. So
that's great.
You know, when you're going to have surgery, whether it be your plastic surgery. I hope you have your patients say, "I request a benevolent outcome that Dr. Cove performs her work absolutely perfectly, and the staff too, and may the results be even better than I can hope for or expect."
Right.
So
right. That's a
good
thing to do.
That's the kicker that I always kind of throw in. I was told it's like it's like you're allowing your guardian angel to come up with outcomes of whatever you're asking that'll be even better than you can hope for or expect. Because, again, we go back to what we spoke of earlier, where you just don't know.
You have limiting beliefs.
Yes.
They're limiting. I mean,
you're limiting.
Yeah. You limit yourself because you expect a certain outcome. You know, oh, yeah, I'm going to need pain medicine. I might need nausea medicine, you know. And then that is what happens, because that's your expectation. So,
yeah.
You know, you can do better than that.
That's
so
true.
I agree.
And it has happened over and over for me, you know, especially like in business, where I'll request a benevolent outcome and for the results to be better than I hope for or expect. And it does.
Right, right. Yeah.
I got... several years ago, I had done a deal with a Spanish TV network that at that time was in Fort Worth, Texas. They're no longer in business, as you'll understand why I mentioned this. And so I had a bunch access to a bunch of Mexican films that a lab in Los Angeles had confiscated because they weren't paid their lab fees.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So I knew a number of them would be okay, but also knew there would be others that would be copyrighted and would not be able to be shown.
Mm-hmm.
And so my
right.
contract with the network was that they were to check to make sure that the technical quality was okay, that there was, some of the films would not be able to be shown on TV because violence or nudity or what have you. And if, after those two, they were supposed to do a copyright search. Well, I called the network, and they said, "Oh, we're just showing them. If somebody complains, we'll take them off the air." Well, they got sued for $5 million. I got sued for $1 million, and another distributor in Houston that had done something else, who knows, got sued for $1 million. And we finally went to arbitration, and I've been requesting benevolent outcomes all along the way, and amazing
right.
things were happening. And in the arbitration, my attorney in Houston was saying, "You know, you realize you're probably going to have to pay something." And I said, "Well, we'll see. I requested benevolent outcome on this." And it turned
right.
out that the station paid $400,000 or $500,000. The guy in Houston paid $100,000, and we paid zero. So,
yeah, well, I mean, and that's correct too, because you had specified that.
Yes.
I mean, you had specified that, so that's also a fair outcome.
Yes.
You know, if you had not specified that, then that might be different. But you are. I mean, you protected yourself in the contract. So, I mean, you can't make somebody else do what they contractually agree to do. You know, it's up to them to do that. They sign on the dotted line.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. The website is www.thegentlewaybooks.com, and you'll just find all sorts of things. All my newsletters, all the way back to 2007, are archived there. I've got all my blogs for years that are archived there, and you can just have a lot of fun, read sample chapters of the books that we've been talking about this morning. So it's a good place to start and start practicing and start experimenting with requesting benevolent outcomes.
And I'd really encourage people to read his books and look at the materials, because this is a way to not only interact with the spiritual help that's available to you, but also raise your vibrational level. I think it will do that as well. The radiant effect, that's the raising of the vibrational level. And that's really what we're supposed to do right now. We're supposed to be working toward, you know, our spiritual goals, which are to work, co-create with spirit, rather than just think we're here, you know, on our own, duking it out, you know, trying
yeah.
to survive and be competitive. You know, that's just old school right now.
And we're
not.
We've got all the fantastic help on the other side. We just
right. Let's use it. Let's
yeah.
use it.
Ask
yeah.
for it. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Tom. I appreciate your taking the time, and it was a great, great book to read. Hopefully, you'll come back on the show when you have more to share with us.
Sure.
Great. Well, this is Dr.
Susan. Thanks for having me, Dr.
Coben.
And
you're
have
welcome.
A most benevolent day, everyone that tunes in now or whenever you're able to tune in.
Great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Tom Moore with The Gentle Way to Master Your Life. And next week, we will be interviewing Jack Westman on The Cancer Solution, A Cancer Handbook, and then Chris Keller on the next week for Quantum Energy Distant Healing. Thank you very much for joining us, and join us next week.